Welcome, everybody, to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Our very special guest today is singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and legendary frontman for the progressive rock group Yes, John Anderson. In support of their critically acclaimed CD-DVD release, Better Late Than Never, the Anderson Ponty Band, featuring music icons John Anderson and Jean-Luc Ponty, will be touring North America in spring of 2016, which is right around the corner. The band played a series of successful U.S. dates in the fall of 2015 and are excited to bring their music to the fans once again. One of the most eagerly awaited releases of 2015, the Anderson Ponty Band's Better Late Than Never, features outstanding performances by the group from September 2014 at the Wheeler Opera House in Aspen, Colorado, as well as some innovative production. Along with some breathtaking new musical compositions, Better Late Than Never also showcases rearrangements of classic Yes hits like Owner of a Lonely Heart, Roundabout, and Wondrous Stories. The album also includes some of Jean-Luc Ponty's beloved compositions, with John's lyrical vocals and melodies enhancing the music and creating a very special and unique sound, such as Infinite Mirage, a new song incorporating Jean-Luc's classic tune, Mirage. Yes's original singer-songwriter for 35 years, John Anderson has had a successful solo career, which includes working with such notable music artists as Vangelis, Kitaro, and Milton Nascimento. International violin superstar Jean-Luc Ponty is a pioneer and undisputed master of his instrument in the arena of jazz and rock. He is widely regarded as an innovator who has applied his unique visionary spin that has expanded the vocabulary of modern music. Together, these two music legends have formed a musical synergy that is unparalleled. The Anderson Ponty Band also includes Jamie Glazer on guitars, which we will also interview after John and me are done, Wally Minko on keyboards, Keith Jones on bass, and Rayford Griffin on drums. Jean-Luc Ponty was originally approached by John Anderson with the idea of working together as far back as the 1980s. Now, 30 years later, the dream has become a reality. It is my great pleasure to welcome the legendary John Anderson to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, John. Good to hear you again, too. Thank you so much for being on the show today. The last time we spoke was back in 2011, and I actually was writing for The Examiner. I was writing for CBS, and my headline was, John Anderson, I'll return to Yes when they wake up. And I guess they never woke up.
No, that's funny. Thank you.
But you're as busy as ever these days, man. I tell you one thing, you've got all kinds of things going on.
Yeah, I'm just finishing an album with a wonderful guitar player out of Sweden called Ryan Stott. He used to have a band called the Flower Kings, and we bumped into each other a couple of years ago, and we've been making an album ever since. It's working out very well.
Now, when is that album going to be released? I know it's coming out soon, because I was doing some snooping, and I saw you already have some of the tracks already out there. So it's pretty much done, right?
Well, we were just finishing the mixing. He just sent me one of the songs yesterday and this morning.
Right.
And it'll come out in June.
So that's exciting
because it's very sort of classic what you would call Yes music. I never left Yes emotionally or musically. I've always dreamed of doing sort of carrying on the kind of music I love, you know, and I'm going to be doing that with Trevor Rabin in a couple of weeks. I'm going over in L.A. to see him. And me and Trevor and Rick Wakeman are putting a band together for the new year, or maybe later this year. Who knows?
That's incredible. I think Yes fans are going to be very, very happy to hear that. And the current Yes lineup now is it's just not there. You know, I'm sorry to hear. I interviewed Billy Sherwood. He's a great guy. I talked with Jeff Downs, all those guys. But you know, it's just not there anymore since Chris is gone. You know,
right? Well, it's one of the things. You know, a band will go out there and perform songs that are very well known, those songs that I wrote for the band and worked with the band in the 70s and the 80s, and they go out and they perform the songs and people love to hear them, which is great. But the future of what I call Yes Music is what I'm dreaming of doing. I've always thought, well, in the next 10, 20 years, I've got to do some great music. I can't sit around and twiddle my thumbs.
Right. No, exactly, and you're not doing that. Not doing that.
No.
You guys are going to be, I think your tour starts April 28th at Fox Tucson Theater.
That's right. Arizona.
Yeah. I guess it ends in Canada, but are you going to continue another leg of that tour after the Canada dates?
I think we'll be finishing then and probably arranging to get together next spring again. You know, Jean-Luc has all this work that he does. Does a lot of jazz festivals.
Right.
And he has these sort of jazz fusion compadres that he works with in Europe. And he is such a sweet guy. And we talked about working together, but we don't want to, you know, go on long tours because, you know, we're just starting this tour in a couple, 3 weeks' time. And it's about 5 weeks, and that's enough.
Right.
And then, you know, things will happen, and I'm going to be, as I said, later on this year, I'll be working with Trevor and Rick, and Jean-Luc's working on a project, I think with Stanley Clarke, I'm not sure.
Oh, wow.
And so you have this sort of little merry-go-round, musical merry-go-round. We'll see what happens in the next 2 or 3 years.
Well, you know, that's what it's all about nowadays. All these guys I interview, all these legends, they're doing more and more collaborations because I guess it's fun. You get to, you know, mix music with all kinds of other, you know, favorites of yours.
Yeah.
You know, and different,
you know,
genres.
Variety is the spice of life.
Exactly. And, you know, I admire you so much, John, because you're so full of positive energy.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. Thank you.
I always feel so good after talking to you.
Thank you.
You know,
I'm very I'm very blessed. I really am. To do what I do, and starting off as a little boy. I found this photograph when I was 5 years old.
Right.
And that's going to be on the album, this album I'm doing with Roy. The album's called Invention of Knowledge.
We
sort of invent life constantly. We're in this process of inventing everything every day, reinventing and then developing and so on. So I look back when I was a little kid, you know, I went to the local farm, worked on the farm when I was 8 years old, 9 years old. You think, gosh, I was always very interested in traveling.
Your brother is a priest, right? Is he? I think we talked about that before.
He's down in the south of England on the Isle of Wight, and he has his lovely church that he actually sings every other day and at weekends, of course. And it's a busy time for him now because of the wonderful period of time that we reflect on at Palm Sunday and Easter and everything and Jesus and things. And it's beautiful.
You would have been a wonderful priest, by the way. I'm originally from the Maryland area, and we did have a priest. He was Irish, and he had longer hair, and he reminded me of you so much. And I said, John Anderson would be a perfect priest.
Well, it's funny because when I started creating music and writing, and obviously with Yes, I was wondering what am I going to write about. And I was always writing about what I was searching for was an understanding of religion, and realized that all religions seem to flow into the same river, into the same ocean.
They do.
And that's what I sing about, that we're all connected all over the world, each kind of people from all over the world. And now with the Internet, it's just an amazing time to be alive and working on music, especially because you can work with people around the world via the Internet. It's just amazing.
You got so many tools at your disposal, you know.
It's true.
Yeah. You know, I saw that, I think it was on your Facebook site, the Rick Wakeman joke says, John is the only guy I know trying to save the planet while living on another.
That's so cool.
That was funny. I like that.
So true.
Now, I got to talk about your wife a little bit, because I love the relationship you guys have. You remind me actually of me and my wife. Every
good.
Time I see a video or something of you guys together, there's always a little smooching going on there. You're very affectionate with each other, which is awesome.
I'm very, very, very again blessed to have someone. Now we're in our 23rd year together.
Congratulations!
And it feels like every day is a fresh day. Every day is a new day, and it doesn't seem like so long ago that we met. But time flies when you're having fun.
It does, doesn't it? Now, she also gives great gifts, by the way. She, for your 70th birthday, didn't she arrange a trip to you, for you for the
for
that 150th celebration? Is it Sibelius?
Sibelius,
right.
In Finland, you know, we were going, you know, I go to concerts in Finland almost every year for the last 10 years in Helsinki and with my solo show. And I always said to Jane, I said, you know, I'd love to go to the Sibelius Festival because it always happens around the first week of September every year.
Right.
It just happened that last year was the special 150th anniversary of his birth, and they played all these symphonies in one week. And I said, oh, my gosh. And Jane arranged it for me. I didn't know. I just knew it might be happening. And then she said, I've organized the tickets. I've got the hotel. I've actually got the balcony seat you keep talking about, because I would think about sitting with her on a balcony overlooking the orchestra. Then you can see them working and you can see the conductor. I didn't want to be sitting in the audience facing the orchestra. I want to be above the orchestra.
Right.
And it was like a dream come true. And the remarkable thing was that, you know, Jane, bless her, had said she's going to do it for me and everything. And then we walked around the near where the festival hall was in this lovely little town in Lahti, it's called, in Finland. And we found this amazing sculpture garden created by this one guy over the years. And it was just like, my wife is a sculpture person. She loves doing sculptures. And she just... We went there every day for like 3 hours a day just looking at these giant sculptures all the way through this forest. And like she says, it was a gift, you know, that she got from helping me come to this festival. She got the great gift as well. So,
that's cool. Amazing. Yeah, that's a cool gift, isn't it? That took a lot of ingenuity, you know, to
arranging
come up with
everything.
That.
She just got in touch with people. She actually put an advert in the local paper in Finland saying, anybody who's a John Anderson fan, get in touch with me.
Is she really?
Get organized how to get there, who to ask for tickets, et cetera, you know, really cool.
Yeah, she's a wonderful lady. She really is.
Yeah, special.
You know, your YouTube video, is it Nous Sommes du Soleil, the name of the song? You know how many hits that has? With you and her, 87,000 hits.
Yeah, cool.
It's doing pretty good, isn't it? People love stories.
very much.
And another thing you got going on, besides music, I saw your artwork.
Yeah, I was actually just getting some art work organized today. I felt like I wanted to do some landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
I've just watched an amazing movie. It's called Mr. Turner, about this great English guy who did sort of seascapes. He's very famous for his skies and the way he painted them in the 20th century. I've watched it 6 times in the last 2 weeks. it's incredibly, it's a very slow movie, but it's such a great movie, and it just inspires you to want to paint again.
Yeah, I love your dream dancing mural. It's really creative, you know.
Yeah, I was actually working on that when I realized I had to recuperate for a 3-month period.
Right.
And have all these operations in 2008. So I thought, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? You know, and then I thought, okay, I'll paint a big mural.
I love it. Are you going to use any of those for a? Are you going to use any of those for like a, an album cover?
You know, I have no idea.
Yeah,
I have no idea. It's just I don't know. I think about it quite a lot actually. So it'll be used one day for something.
Oh, I think it's great. It's very original. How about any of your works? Are they for sale at all?
Well, I did. I spent a lot of time selling them for UNICEF.
Okay.
In the 70s and 80s.
Right.
And then now I've just got lots of them sort of stored away in the room next to my studio room, the cottage. And I often wonder whether I'm going to maybe have a showing of them and raise some money for a local charity or something like that. And we'll see.
I think that'll be great. I would love to see that. You know, I talked to Annie Haslam, you know, from Renaissance.
Oh, yeah.
She's got a lot of good artwork as well.
That's true. I remember seeing it when I went to, I was actually working with the School of Rock in Philadelphia.
Right.
And she came by to see what we were up to, you know, this was many years ago. And she actually brought pictures of her artwork and everything. It was really beautiful.
I'd like to see you guys collaborate together, you and Annie.
Well, we really did at one time.
Oh, you did? Really?
Like, it's the same with Jean-Luc Ponty. You know, I met him first when Yes did a show with Mahavishnu Orchestra. We did three shows in Texas in the late 70s. And Jean-Luc and I just smiled, hi, how are you doing? We chatted for a while. And I just loved his violin playing so much. And I always say, we should work together, you know. And then we bumped into each other again 10 years later, and then, you know, you lose contact with people.
Right.
And then it just came around a couple of years ago that I was working with a friend of mine up in Oregon through the internet, and we'd written a couple of songs, and he said he knew Jean-Luc Ponty, and I think Jean-Luc can play on this one a song, and I said, now that would be so cool because he is great. And he performed on it, and I got in touch with him and sent him some ideas of me singing on one or two of his famous pieces. And I said, this is, you know, it kind of works, your violin and my voice. So
exactly.
That's how the whole project started.
Yeah, I love Jean-Luc. I chatted with him back in 2014 when you had the Kickstarter campaign going on. Yeah, he's such a nice guy. He really is.
Very, very special. It's like meeting my brother from a different mother. Because in some ways it's interesting because he's actually from Brittany, the north of France, and he has a house there, and his parents, I'm not sure about his parents, but of course he has some family there.
Right.
And my great-great grandparents on my mother's side initially were from Ireland, County Kerry, and then they were from Brittany as well. So it's
really?
Like, yeah, we connected again.
Yeah, I think his daughter's in the music, too. Isn't she a pianist or something?
Great.
Yeah.
Incredible piano player, yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. I love the album, by the way. I gave it 5 stars. And let me tell you, you know, it's on Amazon, you had over 123 reviews, and you got a 4.5 rating, which a star rating, which is amazing for Amazon.
Wow.
You know, that's like unheard of.
Wow.
So you great review.
It's an album that was made with love and musical dreams, you know.
Well, I love a lot of the tunes that you kind of, you know, play with, like, you know, Time in a Word, kind of very Jamaican, a little reggae to the song.
Oh, yeah.
Loved it. And, of course, you know, another great tune. I loved Infinite Mirage. That was a very, very good song. I was trying to think of what my favorite is. And it's very difficult, you know. Renaissance of the Sun was a wonderful song as well.
Right.
And I like the way, I don't know if this was on the record or not, but Roundabout starts out with a bass, right?
True.
Which is very different.
Yeah, that happened because we were doing a sound check in rehearsal, and the bass player started playing the beginning part, the Steve Howe guitar part, on bass. And I just said, wait a minute, that's the way we should start the track. You know, it works really good.
It does work.
You don't want to be really trying to copy Steve
right.
Howe.
Right.
You want to do something a little bit more inventive, and that's how I think about music in general, rightly or wrongly. I feel that if you're going to reproduce something from 30 years ago, you don't really need to have it sound exactly like the record. You can actually
exactly.
modify it, develop it, and so, and hope the audience like it as well.
The intro was neat, too. I love the intro. That'd be a good intro for the concert, you know.
Yes, it's a bit all-round show, and
people
are getting to know it. And I think me and Jean-Luc had this feeling that it'll take time for people to catch on to it because there's no sort of hit records or radio records, per se, on the album. Let people get to know that there's a show worth going to see and be entertained, and that's what happens, you know. That's what it's all about anyway.
Yeah, it'll be a great show. I just wish maybe on the second leg of the tour you'll come down south, come
Please.
To Florida.
I know, I wish, and I was mentioning that to APA, our agency, and they said, oh, well, we'll see. You've got to get promoters interested, and eventually, in fact, we might be playing down in Miami in July.
Right.
A group of people want us to go to South America.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, well, we'd have to fly through Miami. Why don't we go there a couple of days early and do a show and then fly?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've got a couple of venues for you in mind, one in Clearwater and one in Largo.
Oh, yeah.
I just hooked up Corky Lang. He's doing his mountain thing, and he's playing with Ginger Baker's son.
Right.
And I just got him a gig over there in Largo, in the Largo Cultural Center.
Excellent. Well, get in touch with APA. You need
to
talk to Val Wolf.
I think you guys would be good at the Ruth Eckerd Hall. It'd
yes,
be perfect
yes.
for you. That'd be a good
so.
Size for you and everything. Yeah. Well, okay,
thank you, Ray. You'll be our agent.
Yeah, I'll be your agent, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Is there any chance with the Raven Wakeman that you might consider Steve Howe or Bill Bruford, maybe, on drums?
Is he retired now, you know.
Oh, is he retired? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, Steve's just living his own life and is the
right.
way he wants to. And it's just the way, when I first spoke with Trevor and Rick, I said to Trevor, you know, he's doing incredible film scores these days.
He is, yeah.
Why don't we do a film score style show, album? And he said, what? I said, well, nobody's ever done it. So we could do all the Yes pieces like they're in a film, a movie sort of thing. I don't know how to explain it over the phone, but the idea was like, let's make the show sound very, very 21st century.
Why not? Yeah, why not? I think that'll be great. You know, I talked to Chris Squire at the time. I think he was in Hawaii. He was on break or something. But he was talking about a Yes on Broadway thing. Did you ever hear about that?
He talked to me about it.
Yeah.
I said, well, better get organized quick.
I told him how displeased I was that you weren't in the band anymore, too, by the way. But,
well,
you know,
he's laughing now. Don't worry.
I know.
I spoke to his wife. We call them widows, but I don't think about it like that. His wife told me that before he died, he wanted to go to Maui to spend his last days. You know.
Oh, really?
And I was in Maui the day that he passed away, and I actually had a sort of spiritual visitation from him, which was actually wonderful in my dream.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up and I had this dream of Chris and smiling and covered in wonderful light and gold dust and everything. It was really amazing.
That must have been tough for you because you guys founded the band, you and Chris, right?
Well, we've sort of grown apart over the past 10 years in some
right.
ways, but I still loved him, and I told him that I actually emailed him when I heard he was sick, and I told him, you know, without you, Chris, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, so I'm so grateful. Get well. Come on. Let's keep the music going. And I thank you so much for being part of my life, you know. Mm-hmm. And he actually emailed back the same thing, that he realized that without each other we wouldn't have done anything in this world.
That's true. You guys harmonize so well together.
On many levels, not only music, but being together, you know, traveling, touring, 35 mm-hmm. years of our lives.
It's amazing.
It's half a lifetime.
It is. It's very sad. It's hard to believe that Chris isn't around anymore, you know?
That's true.
It really is.
True.
Yeah.
But he was so funny. He had a strange sense of humor. You know, he was always late. One of the things about Chris, he was never on time for anything.
Really?
And he would drive Steve Howe crazy, especially Bill Bruford, you know? So we'd be getting ready to... in the hotel, getting ready to get in the taxi to get to the airport, and we all stand mm-hmm. there in the lobby. Where's Chris? Oh, man, he's late again. Every time. And Trevor Rabin just couldn't stand it. Anyway, there was this sort of argument going on. He said, well, you can always say on my epitaph, on my stone, in the cemetery, it'll be the late Chris Squire.
Yeah. That's funny.
We all collapsed and thought, okay.
That's funny. I got one story. I know we got to wrap up here, but you told me a story last time we interviewed about you guys were on the way to, you're on the plane, and I think, let's see, you were on the way to Philadelphia, I think.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You remember that story?
Well, it was me and Rick Wakeman at the bar
You had a few drinks.
Eddie Alford, you know, and we said, "Oh, we better get on the plane." So we rushed to this gate, and we got on the plane. And we're in those days, you know, nobody checked your ticket or anything.
Right.
And we got on the plane, and we're flying away up to. And the people come on the announcer says, "We'll be in Chicago in about 20 minutes of time." I said, "Wait a minute, we're supposed to be going to Pittsburgh." We got on the wrong plane. Oh, my gosh.
That is so funny. But somebody stood up, and Rick, I think, stood up and said, excuse me, can you turn the plane around?
Yeah.
How funny is that?
Oh, my gosh.
John, here's a question I ask everybody I interview. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, and they could have passed on already, who would that be?
Well, I always think of Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder?
Because there was a moment in time in my life, I think we'd finished Tales from Topographic Ocean, the album, and it was getting very, very bad criticism, and there was a lot of frustration going around. Rick wasn't happy, and the band was unhappy about Rick being unhappy. And there was really bad feelings of, why did we do this album? We could have done a more commercial album from management and so on.
Right.
And I remember being home and feeling very depressed about everything. And somebody knocked on my door. It was an old friend, and he brought me an album. And it was Stevie Wonder's The Secret Life of Plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it on. And honestly, I cried most of the way through it, realizing that music is really all about music. It's not just money, you know. You're in creation. And it was like Stevie Wonder does it as well. He creates music from his soul, from his heart. Mm-hmm. And I've always wanted to meet him and tell him. And I will do one day. He's one of the greatest singers, songwriters of all time, musicians as well, and so if ever I could sing or just hang out and sing with somebody, it would be Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder, yeah. Great answer.
Thank you very much.
Great answer. John, do you have anything else you want to promote?
No, I'm very happy to have spoke with you today. And,
me too,
you're
John.
Going to be with Jamie G, who is really such a cool guy and a wizard on stage, a great guitar player, and a lot of fun. He's a kind of a funny character. And so I thank you, and I wish you well, and I hope and pray we actually come and play at Clearwater, and you'll be
me
there.
Too. If okay. I can help in any way, I will help you, okay?
Please, please, please. I wish you well.
Yep. You too, John. God bless you, okay?
Thanks a lot, Ray.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. To purchase the latest release from the Anderson Ponte Band entitled Better Late Than Never, visit Amazon.com or www.andersonpontiband.com. The album received rave reviews. For more information and tour dates, visit the official Anderson Ponte Band website. Again, www.andersonpontiband.com or John Anderson's official website at www.johnanderson.com. John Anderson on Facebook, www.facebook.com/thejohnanderson, and Jean-Luc Ponte official website, www.ponte.com. Coming up next, the guitarist for the Anderson Ponte Band, Jamie Glazer. Jamie Glazer is best known as the guitarist for Grammy Award-winning musical acts Jean-Luc Ponte, Chick Corea, Bryan Adams, Gloria Trevi, Manhattan Transfer, and so much more. His guitar can be heard on over 170 albums as well as on the biggest sitcoms of all time, Seinfeld and Married with Children. Jamie's compositions can be heard weekly on CBS Sports, ABC, Animal Planet, History Channel, Discovery, and ESPN. His solo albums have been successful worldwide. Jamie is presently the guitarist for John Anderson and the Jean-Luc Ponte. The Anderson Ponte Band recently completed a U.S. tour on the heels of their recent CD-DVD release, Better Late Than Never. Jamie's novel is entitled Hear the Silence, about healing, strength, courage, love of oneself, and others. In 1994, guitarist, performer, music composer, and producer Jamie Glazer was in the North Ridge earthquake in California when the shaking stopped. Nothing was the same. From 1978 to 1994, he toured the world with Grammy Award-winning musical acts, lived a good life in Los Angeles, and suddenly found himself unable to get out of bed for 6 months. Jamie lost all his worldly possessions in the days following the earthquake. His self-esteem, his quality work, and eventually found himself homeless and without hope. Please welcome guitarist, singer, songwriter, arranger, and author Jamie Glazer to the Ray Shasho Show.
Hey, Ray. Hey, everybody out there.
Hey, Jamie. Thank you so much, man, for being on the show today and sharing the spotlight with John Anderson.
Thank you so much. I know that he was he just doing an interview with you shortly before
yeah,
me, right?
He did. That's, he did.
He's amazing.
He is amazing. I've talked to John before, and I've talked to Jean-Luc before during the campaign to raise money for the album. Yeah, and both great guys. You can't get any better human beings than Jean-Luc Ponte and John Anderson.
Well, you know, I'm looking at a picture of you on the internet. I see there's a guitar there. You're a guitarist as well?
I play some guitar, yeah. That's a actually, I sold that guitar. That was a Fender 73 Telecaster.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And,
it's gone, huh?
Yeah, darn. It's gone, unfortunately. And I had an accident recently. I broke my hand, and I had several surgeries, and I'm worried I'm going to be playing for quite a long time. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's awful.
Yeah, it's kind of disabled, so it's I don't know what to do. You know, hopefully it'll heal up and I'll be able to play again.
You know, I am all about this trying to inspire others. I really have it's very, very important for me. I know you mentioned in the intro about the book, and that was a life changer, you know, and I should like to share with you that I had a scooter accident. I've got I guess most people across the country would call it a moped, but it's a Honda CR80. It goes about 40 miles an hour at most. Mm-hmm. And we just call it a scooter here in Utah. And I was driving in an area where the traffic could go 55 miles an hour. Not a freeway, but an actual street here. And I decided to get out of the way and pulled off to the shoulder. And no one told anybody. There were no signs that they were rebuilding an area there. There were holes everywhere. A wall and stuff. Anyway, I ended up hitting a hole, popping out, hitting another one, hitting a wall, and I ended up in a wheelchair for months with a broken tibia and the humerus, the ball of the left shoulder, was completely cracked. They had to, paste what's the word they use? The piece of my pelvis onto my shoulder to make it a ball again.
Right,
and,
right.
Graft,
right, yeah. They did a graft on my hand, too.
Yeah, well, do you know where they took it from?
From where?
No, I'm asking you.
Oh, for me, I have no idea. I have no idea where they got it from. They never told me. I just know they did it.
Well, you know, they told me, and I'm again, it's to inspire you. They said that I may not walk well, and I may not play using my left arm properly. And I told them there's no way I accept that. And I went to work immediately at the convalescent home that they put me in. You know, there was a lot of older people. I was the youngest person in a convalescent home.
Right.
And I grabbed the piano that was there. And the day I arrived, I was still on Percocet and still in hell, but I started to entertain them with the brace on my arm.
Wow.
And I said, I looked up to this guy. I said, you know, this is what my passion is and, what my joy is. I need to do this. And Ray, it was so painful. I can't even, I can still remember. And I played for them, and I did a bunch of sing-alongs. I used to play weddings and bar mitzvahs and stuff in New York, and I knew all those old tunes, And without a doubt, it was a tough challenge, but I wouldn't give up, and I'm happy to tell you that now I walk just fine. I play fine. The only difficulty I have is once in a while, if I feel like looking like Jimi Hendrix and putting my guitar behind my head, it's a little tough. But so I want to inspire you to go and do whatever you can with that injury of yours.
Well, my passion is music, and it has been forever. And I'm a writer, and of course I do this show. So
yes.
It's my right hand. The hand I write with or type with, But if you have a passion, you'll get through it. I really do believe that. And I can't believe you got through not only this, but you got through this earthquake thing that kind of destroyed your life too, right?
Well, I in the book I kind of talk about how it happened, but it was a bad series of events because I was with Manhattan Transfer,
right?
Which you did mention, and we were in a country where there was bombing going on, not hundreds of miles away, but the American Embassy wanted us to get out. Mm-hmm. And so it was the end of the tour anyway. We hopped on a flight, but I have never heard ammunition even really. I've never been near a gun. And I heard the bombing. It was frightful, man. It was just off the charts. And we took the flight, and it was the end of the tour, so I didn't sleep. And we were, I guess it was Bosnia or Yugoslavia area.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I got home. And that was 3, 4, or 5 hours later, after I pulled my suitcase into my house, the earthquake hit. So here I was already thinking that I was going to die at this country. I show up in Los Angeles, and the earthquake did what it did. And I was only a mile from the epicenter. So what happened after that was I didn't sleep for nearly a week. I was in the trunk, not the trunk, the hatchback of my Mustang with my dog.
Wow.
Because the police fire people would not let me back into my place.
Right.
And so I slept, or I tried to sleep, and then we had the aftershocks and all the rest. And when the week was over, actually about 5 days, to be honest with you, I was not me anymore. And it was, that was the beginning of the hell that I write about. Actually, the book is not really about the hell, but about how I got out of the hell. And it's because I really feel it's important to try to inspire so many people out there that are suffering with depression or suffering with sadness even. I've made it my life's work to do that. Certainly the music you and I play and others play can soothe the soul, but I felt that was an important it was very important for me to release Hear the Silence, so I have that book out. And You know, the only problem is now that I get hundreds of letters from people who are having a tough time, and I have to keep telling them, look, I'm not a doctor, you know, I'm a guitarist. You are an author, so I'm sure you get mail and about your work, and, you know, I don't want to be a quack. I just tell them, look, this is what happened. And, but, you know, life is amazing. Everything's good, and very proud to be playing with Anderson Ponte.
Let me give you a plug for the book. Hear the Silence is available at Amazon.com. I'm sure it's available at all, you know, Barnes & Noble and all the other avenues.
Where the e-book is. The paperback e-book is with Amazon, yeah.
Okay, and I think there's a, isn't there a,
there's an audiobook?
Audiobook, yeah, I was trying to think of the word audio.
The audiobook I sell through my website since it's a download.
Okay.
And I've tried to keep the price way down on $5,
right?
So people that
that's excellent.
Can use some help.
Mm-hmm.
Do that. I've sent a bunch of free ones too. I get a lot of mail on Facebook and people. You know, I've got to do my thing, Ray. You know, got to try to step up a little bit.
What was the trigger that got you out of the depression and the funk that you were in after the earthquake and everything? That, you know, kind of lifted you up.
Well, I have to say that the fact is that Hear the Silence, the whole book, is not a biography in any way. You know, I keep getting letters, why don't you write more about the touring? And it's really about the lessons I learned. And the main part of the book is that I wasn't aware or hearing, as I say, Hear the Silence. I didn't know what was out there to help me.
Right.
I wasn't reaching out. I talk in the book about the importance of reaching out to other people, because so many people who are in trouble, in whatever way, it becomes just them, you know? It becomes a revolving door where they're completely sad. They don't know why sometimes. Like, I didn't know why. I had a doctor, the head of the whole California Mental Association, Jerry Seinfeld's composer, Jonathan Wolf.
Right.
He paid for my therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I went once a week, and first they said, well, you know, you spend money wildly, and you're pretty manic, and da-da-da-da-da, you must be bipolar. So that was the first diagnosis. He put me on Prozac.
Yep.
And it didn't help. In fact, it almost ruined me. And eventually we decided it has nothing to do with bipolar. It was PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a kind of forum where... still, when I go to Los Angeles, which I do often, I sometimes get a little nervous. I've been through one where there was a small earthquake, and I hid in my room. But aside from that, I'm not afraid to go there anymore, you know. So I think that the main thing is reaching out to other people, and the stuff I write about in the book that helped me, that hopefully will help others to see what's there to bring happiness and joy and celebration back.
Exactly. Well, I think everybody needs to buy this book. Depression is running rampant in the world, but especially in the United States, you know.
And, I agree. I mean, especially here, I'm not sure why.
And people need help. They don't know what the solution is. They don't see their doctor half of the time. And they just need to see their doc, and you know, usually it's just you need to get on something, you know, some kind of medication or anything.
Positively. When this book came out, you know, it was first published by a company called Chipmunka,
right,
in England, and very proud of that. But you know, I solicited a couple of publishers, but this was a mental health publisher,
mm-hmm.
and it did pretty well. But just my luck, Ray. It turned out that the CEO, the guy who was responsible for royalties and business transactions, was schizophrenic.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah. So I mean, it's kind of a funny story for my audience because when it was time for royalties, I got a call from this fellow who ran the company, who said, "Well, you know, I know we need to pay you, and we will, but I was actually calling you." And I'm not going to do a British accent because it's lousy what I do. He says, I would like to be a rap artist. And I'd like to rap about schizophrenia, bipolar, all this stuff. Meanwhile, he's like the whitest guy. And this was a time when there were hardly any white people doing rap.
Right.
I couldn't get my royalties out of him. He wanted until I did tracks for him. It was really the charts. So I called an attorney in California, and they got me out of the deal. And so it is self-published now.
You just never know.
It's just kind of a funny story that I figured this would be great. I'm going to sign with someone who's into mental health, and I got messed up with a guy who didn't want
it. Unbelievable.
It was crazy. I will definitely, if you don't have a copy, I will get you one.
I appreciate that.
Love you to read it.
I would
please.
Love to. Yeah.
Thanks, Ray.
I told John earlier how much I enjoyed the Anderson Ponte Band album, Better Late Than Never. Is this your first time working with John?
It is. And
it is.
In fact, I'm not sure of your whole background. I've been reading about you since yesterday, just finding tidbits of great things. You do some great stuff. The overwhelming thing that's happened is, and I'm sure you know because you're in this business, is someone has to put a label on you. You know,
right. Mm-hmm.
Years ago, when I was in Los Angeles as a studio musician, you mentioned the sitcoms in the intro. I started to see that all the calls I was getting from Aaron Spelling Goldberg, all the Disney, all the big studios, were always kind of jazzy parts. There wasn't jazz like swing, right. But they were not. You know, I knew other guitar players in L.A. who were doing all this great stuff on TV, rocking out, whatever. And I saw that, with all due respect to the word jazz, that if that was going to be my niche, I was going to end up either not working that much or broke. Besides, my passion is music. I love rock and roll. I mean, my look was rock and roll, everything. Maybe that's what they liked. I looked like a heavy metal guy, but I was playing jazz. You know, so anyway, I went to A&M Records, mm-hmm. where I was submitting songs to a wonderful guy. His name is Hernando Cartwright.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked in his office, he expecting me to bring my latest songs of the week.
Right.
Because my dad was a famous lyricist and
for
Sinatra and all this. So I was writing with my dad before he died. And I walked in his office. I said, "How you doing, Hernando?" He says, "Good. Show me what you got." And I said, "Listen, if you don't mind, I have a favor to ask. Would you please get me with a rock star?" And he says, "You want to play with a rock star?" I said, "Yeah, I want to play with him." I mean, it's kind of crazy because, you know, considering guitarists, musicians looking for gigs.
Right.
I just walked into the record. He says, "Okay, well, give me 24 hours." So I said, you know, and you build what's really, and I do this when I do my success seminars. I tell people, it's not who you know, it's how you know them.
Right.
And
right.
I built up a real friendship with him.
Yep.
We knew each other's families, and sure enough. In 24 hours, he called and he said, "Look, we've got a guy. We're going to probably put $1 million behind him. Mm-hmm. He's from Canada.
Right.
And we really think he's going to be a big. Mm-hmm. We're trusting our instincts on this. And can you get to New York by tomorrow? We'll pay for it. Mm-hmm. We need you to meet a guy named Brian Adams."
Yeah.
So I said, "Sure." I got on the plane. My Les Paul, a couple of the guitars, and I went to the power station to meet him and Bob Clare Mountain, and the rest is history. It changed my entire career.
Amazing.
You know, just one little thing, you know?
Yep.
And why I'm telling you, in order, I didn't forget your question. John, the group Yes, you know, mm-hmm. is considered a prog band, I guess, right?
Yep, yeah.
And now that I'm with Anderson Ponte, I've got amazing new friends and fans.
That's right.
That are calling me a prog guitarist. and you know, I never was. And they all expect that I know all of the Yes songs, the Topographic Oceans, all this stuff. And I don't, you know, I had one of their albums. It was Fragile. You know, I got Close to the Edge. And that's all I had because Jean-Luc Ponty was on the top of the charts at the mm-hmm. same time Yes was at the top of the
right.
charts.
Right.
And I was with Jean-Luc. So I never met John. I know Jean-Luc met him years ago, but I never met him. And I hardly knew anything about Yes except there was a guy named Steve Howe on guitar and he played pretty good, you know. Learned later he played great, but I didn't know that at the time. So, yeah, I didn't know John at all, and I'm very glad to call him a friend now, and he's a really good boss and a great entertainer. I really enjoy working with him.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Real good guy. You may end up in the next generation of Yes. You never know.
Well,
you know, there's a lot of changes going on. You know, Chris, unfortunately, Chris Squire passed away. You know, and there's some, you know, Yes is not the same band. You know, Steve Howe may retire. Who knows? He's getting up there.
So it is really strange. I mean, you'd have to see, even on, I'm very active with email marketing. I was marketing for companies in L.A. years ago before the Internet, and I pride myself on that because a lot of musicians, with all due respect to my brethren, they don't know anything about business.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
And because the business is about your dream and about your passion and about your art, and I don't see anything wrong with making money or doing business and helping others. So I've been involved a lot with social media.
Well, send the artists that don't know anything about business that need help my way. I've got a PR company, and not only that, I've been in business all my life. I was an entrepreneur, and I was in the banking industry for 13 years, so I can really help these guys, you know?
I could learn from you then. This is good.
I'm an honest guy.
That's publicity works, isn't it?
Yeah, publicity works, yeah.
Yeah,
but I got a good background on business as well, so.
Well, I mean, the thing is that the people that I've trained, you know, I teach in music colleges. I've asked them, and there is not even a desire to know. There was kind of a particularly years ago, to think that you are playing to get a paycheck was almost looked down upon by some.
Yeah, exactly. And, it's the same thing in the journalism business. You know, I've interviewed close to 500 guys, and What paycheck? You know?
Yeah.
I do it for the love of music. You know?
I've heard that a billion times. And I
know.
You can love the music, and you can also pay for the gas in your car.
Exactly. That's about it. I get free CDs and then free tickets. Yeah. I'm backstage, and that's about it.
Well, you know, and you got to respect that. And there were times I questioned myself, you know, about this. I mean, because there is this... I don't know, kind of respect for the artist.
Right.
And I was like, well, maybe I'm just not meant to be, you know, that. But I, you know what, I've just been blessed like crazy, man. I just get this chance. And, you know, with this thing with John and Jean-Luc, I'd been with Jean-Luc and I started in 78.
Long time.
Yeah. And he's my biggest inspiration in my life. And,
yep.
For sure, and we came at a time where that music was big and powerful and it was a revolution of kinds, just like with Yes with their music.
Exactly.
And to be, Ray, I kind of pinch myself. First of all, I've got John Anderson. I'm standing there playing a solo, standing next to him. He is so passionate about music.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was a very interesting first meeting. We did the whole album on Skype.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I never met John ever.
Yeah.
Because maybe John spoke to you. They had another guitar player that started with the band. When they came up with the concept, there was a guy named Jamie Dunlap, a very talented composer. He writes for, what's the show? Not The Simpsons. It's a big show on TV. And he couldn't tour because of his other commitments.
Right.
And so I'm really glad he was really busy because this opportunity to make music with John. But, you know, John has all these kind of influences and inspiration from Sibelius to all kinds of things, his travels. And I am academically taught.
Yep.
So...
It's a great team. It's a great collaboration. It really is.
You know, we first got up there, it was like we had to come up with a language to speak to each other.
Yeah.
Because he would say, John would come up to me and he'd say, give me kind of like a little Motown-ish. Just try this. Just try that. Just try this. And I'm not, I'm really used to the other system, which is, here, Jamie, here's a chart. Read this, and if you
right.
feel like screwing around with the part a little bit, let me see what you come up with. So this was a whole different, and plus John plays, so, mm-hmm. you know, he'll come up with one of his strummer or his guitar or whatever, and show me what he's thinking. And so it's a very different thing than, it's very refreshing, actually. It's really cool. And once John and I think a lot of the band, had an understanding of how to explain what we're doing, we started to fly, right?
Yeah,
Did you come to any of the live shows that we did in fall?
I have not. No, I'm in Florida, so you guys haven't hit the South yet. And I told John about that. I said, if you can't find a venue, I'll find one for you, you know? So
well, what did he say?
He says, find a venue for me.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, there's an Anderson Pawnee page on Facebook.
Right.
And I don't know how many people know this, but I manage that page, which means that I don't do much on it unless there's action. But, you know, I'm on there, and I respond to every message, everybody.
Yep.
But they're all many times. I would say 80% of the time, they think they're speaking directly to John or Jean-Luc.
Yeah. And it's you.
And it's unfortunate, but these guys are too busy to...
Of course.
Too busy. I get up at 2 in the morning to answer Anderson Pawnee Band questions. And with that, we've probably had 1,000 people write, why aren't you coming to Florida?
Yeah, I know. It's the South, for some reason, gets. I think it's just a matter of hooking up with promoters and things like that. And I know a lot of these guys, so I can really... I just got Corky Lang a gig. From Mountain.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll have to come to you for the next.
There you go.
Round. I mean, I don't know how it all works. I get our agency in California. They call me with the dates because I have to supply them on the page.
Right.
And meanwhile, I mean, I'm not even sure that John and Jean-Luc are aware of the tons of messages. Most of the messages are from Floridians, and also quite a bit from North Carolina.
Right.
Yeah, the South, as you said.
Yeah, it's the South. I mean,
And we're telling them, well, we're playing in Texas. Why don't you come see us there?
Come see us in Texas, right?
it's kind of like we don't know what the geography is like here. You know, just get in your car. We'll see you in Houston.
Yeah, no problem. Jamie, we're kind of winding down here. I just want to mention on YouTube, everybody needs to go see this the cover of Hocus Pocus by Focus. You are jamming there. With the Brunson Brothers, right?
Oh, thank you.
Awesome video. You don't get to hear somebody else do Hocus Pocus, you know. And
I arranged that. They wanted to do a trumpet album of all rock and roll.
Awesome. It's awesome.
Thank you so much, Ray. Thank you, man.
You guys did a great version of that. I wanted to see. I know you're a huge animal lover. I support that. You know, I could never be a hunter. I've interviewed Ted Nugent, I could never talk to him about animals because I think we'd have a feud there.
did he bring that up during the interview?
No, he did. We just talked about politics. Once you get him on politics, it's all over.
I once voiced my opinion about hunting on Facebook, and it ended up my personal page didn't look the way I wanted it to look anymore.
Right.
So I deleted that. But I would say that I'm pro-rescue. I have 16 pets.
Wow.
I've got seven chinchillas, and for 15 years, you know, I've got a guinea pig, a rabbit, two dogs, and the rest are parrots. So not only do I play a little guitar with the Anderson Pawnee Band, but I know how to clean cages. So, if you need any help there,
my daughter's got a rabbit. My daughter's got a rabbit.
That's really good. What do you know what kind it is?
You know, it was supposed to be a dwarf rabbit, but I don't think it is. It looks, you know, it's bigger than a dwarf rabbit. You know, the rabbit's 10 years old already? Can you believe that?
You're kidding.
10 years old.
That is a testament to your care because pet rabbits are not doing as well as they could at home, in most homes.
Oh, hey, this is a great rabbit. He's so smart. And we call him Roger.
Mine too. Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, Roger Rabbit.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, Ray, I wanted to thank you for having me. It's a pleasure, and I hope to get to know you even better.
Me too. I'll get you on the show when we have longer than 30 minutes. I got one last question for you, okay?
Yes, sir. Yeah,
here's a question I ask everybody that I've interviewed. Uh-oh. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be? And it could be somebody that's already passed on. John said Stevie Wonder.
I think I'd say Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney. You like to jam out with him, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. People often ask, even in written interviews, who are my favorites, and I learn from everybody, and I love them, you know. But the only concerts I've been to, aside from the ones I'm in, has been Paul McCartney. I've gone to 3 shows of his. I don't find myself a fan of anybody. I mean, I'm a fan of everybody, but
yeah.
For some reason, maybe it's the Beatle connection.
Right,
I don't know
right.
what it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think I'd like to play with Paul McCartney.
That's a popular answer.
Is it really?
It's a very popular answer, yeah.
Well,
believe it or not, Stevie Wonder's popular, too. Yeah.
Stevie's great.
He's great.
I have a little, I know we're running out of time, but I have a little thing with Stevie because I had a very important guest come to California when I was living there, and I reserved the best table at, maybe I shouldn't mention the restaurant on the air, but it was really worked for this. I really went there, and it's not my style. I planned everything out. It's going to be perfect, you know. And when we got there, I said, hi, I have reservations for Jamie Glazer, plus one, whatever. And they said, well, we're so sorry. We're going to have to we can't put you where you had reserved because Stevie Wonder wants that seat. And this is a memory I'll never forget because I'm respectful, but I said, Stevie Wonder doesn't see.
Yeah.
And he didn't need that with the 2 palm trees and the beautiful thing.
Right, right.
He said, Mr. Glazer, we're so sorry. And it was it turned out kind of cool because at the end they gave me free desserts and free drink.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the only thing. Aside from that, I would love to play with Stevie Wonder.
Awesome.
It's amazing.
Awesome.
And I want to play, and I'd like to jam with you, and I hope you get your hand back. So
yeah,
we
I hope
can jam.
My hand comes back. hopefully. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I just got to, practice, I guess. Keep practicing.
Yeah,
please
do. Yeah. If I can be of any help, you let me know. And
I appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being on the show today, and more importantly, for all the incredible music you've given us and continue to bring us. And listen, good luck on the tour, man. It's coming right around the corner.
Thank you. It's my honor.
All right, Jamie. Take care, man.
All right. Thank you.
To purchase the latest release from the Anderson .Paati Band entitled Better Late Than Never, visit Amazon.com. The album receives rave reviews on Amazon.com. For more information and tour dates, visit the official Anderson .Paati Band website, www.andersonpaatiband.com. Visit Jamie Glazer's official website at www.jamieglazer.com. Facebook, he's got his Facebook page at www.facebook.com, JamieGlazer333. And he's also on Twitter, twitter.com/JGlazer333. Purchase Jamie Glazer's novel, Hear the Silence, at Amazon.com. 5-star reviews. Join me biweekly, Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on The Ray Shasho Show. Very special thanks to the great Glass Onion PR and wonderful Billy James for hooking us up today with John Anderson and Jamie Glazer of the Anderson .Paati Band, and especially Don and Doug Newsome with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com. You'll live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio, Station 1.